Another week, another batch of new releases to review. Let's see, what do we have this week? Something from two grunge era survivors together at last, an indie icon termed jam band leader, and a Canadian country singer who drops references to obscure hockey players in her songs, as well as a little rock critic scandal. On the line to help us understand what the heck that means is Los Angeles Times pop critic Ann Powers. Hi, Ann.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. So we're going to start up with Kathleen Edwards, Asking for Flowers. It's her third album.
Right.
Is it really representative of her career so far?
I think she's really grown over the years. I mean, she's always had Kathleen is Canadian, and she's sort of in between, folk and country, I guess, or whatever. She's in that Patty Griffin territory, sort of sophisticated country folk. I don't know, but when she started, she was always a great songwriter, and she always had a knack for the conversational. I think what she's gained over the years, over the past about 6 years, I think, is a better sense of musicality and how to structure her songs as well. So this is really maybe her strongest record ever.
Let's listen to the title track. It's called Asking for Flowers.
My life is like a picture left out too long in the sun. Now I'm trying to remember all the faces of the names I've loved and all that's left to me now is a cigarette.
Oh, I can hear the Lucinda Williams comparisons are going to come rolling in.
It's there for sure. It's definitely there.
Are they deserved? Does the whole record sound like this?
Yeah, it's a cool mix because there are these sort of poignant songs like this one, in which she really takes on the persona of often of a woman who isn't quite in the best relationship or is trying to cope with a difficult man, basically. But then she also has these totally, kicking, get out of here, difficult man songs. There's one called The Cheapest Key that seems like a slap at maybe an old musician boyfriend. And she can do both now, and I think that's a big gain, that she really, she's always had a sense of humor, as you said. She makes hockey jokes a lot. But the humor feels really natural now, and I think that's what makes, for me, that's what makes this record really notable.
This record was co-produced by Edwards and Jim Scott, who's pretty well known for his work as a producer and a mixer and engineer. He's worked with the Bare Naked Ladies, Counting Crows, Johnny Cash. Do you think he enhances her performance?
I think there's a clarity to the recording and a sort of a warmth to the recording that's really great. I'm glad you mentioned those other people Scott has worked with, because we always have to remember with these Canucks that they're much bigger stars in their native country than they are even, 10 miles across the border. So I think, Kathleen may seem like a newcomer to some listeners down here in the U.S., but she's a pretty big deal up there north. So she feels like a mature artist. She is a mature artist, and it's great to see her coming into her own.
All right, the next band we're going to talk about, the Gutter Twins, have a little bit of history. They're Greg Dooley and Mark Lanigan, respectively, of Afghan Whigs and Screaming Trees. Two bands in the 90s known for being just a little bit dangerous, engaging in various degrees of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. What do we need to know about these guys before we hear a little bit of the record?
Well, one thing to know is that in alternative rock, it's always hard to be a man's man. It always has been. And in the 90s, which was an era when there were a lot of amazing women in rock as well, I think it was particularly hard to play that role. Lanigan and Dooley both did it in different ways. Dooley was known as like a sex symbol, kind of. He always wrote about really messed up relationships.
He's kind of louche.
Yeah, that would be the word. He hasn't had a photograph taken of him without a cigarette in his mouth for the past 15 years, I think. And Lanigan was a sort of a darker soul, friend of Kurt Cobain, very deep-voiced, sort of almost like a blues man, but a skinny white indie rock blues man. So for them to come together is sort of this meeting of the indie rock macho dude titans or something. But they're older now, so there's also a bit of a relaxed feeling about this connection that they've made.
I was really excited. I like both those bands. I like both these singers very much. So I'm really curious what this is going to sound like. Here's Idle Hands from the Gutter Twins. The name of the album is Saturnalia.
My idle hands, there's nothing I can do. Devil's plaything, baby, I know that I've been used. Her lips are cold, they suffer me. They drag me under, baby, into your suffering.
That's a lot of testosterone in one little song.
That's Mark Lanegan on the lead vocals there. Dooley's never been quite the stunning vocal presence. He's more about his mind in a way. Like, he's a very smart guy, and he's made really interesting mood music over the years. But together they find, well, it's undeniable. It's like that testosterone thing, like you're saying. I mean, in a way, you could kind of chuckle at it, that they're still doing this into their 40s or whatever, you know. I mean, it's a bit Dennis Hopper-ish, I have to say. But it sounds great, and what's cool about the record is that it represents what both of them have been doing in their own solo work, so they bring their strengths. So the Lanegan songs like that one are sort of bluesy, rootsy, gothic, and then the Dooley-dominated songs have this moody electronic quality to them. He's been dabbling in electronic music recently. And so it really is both of them at their top form. So that's what makes it really great. And I haven't seen him yet, but I'm excited to see him because I'm sure it will be the showdown of the cigarette butts thrown by the side of the stage, you know.
All right, our next track we're going to listen to, I don't know if this is good news or bad news for fans of the band Pavement. Stephen Malkmus has a new group. He's known as Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks. It's called Real Emotional Trash. What kind of evolution has he gone through?
Well, you know, Malkmus left. I mean, Pavement has been dormant or non-existent for a while. Malkmus moved to Portland when he married his wife, and they have two kids now. It's hard to believe that the callow youth who was called the Grace Kelly of indie rock by Courtney Love is now a dad who's seen out in Portland wearing a baby in his sling, but it's true. And he also has relaxed. I guess that's what happens when you get old, huh? And this band, which also includes the great Janet Weiss from Slater Kinney on drums,
cool,
and some other really notable Portland musicians, is being called a jam band, basically. Very loose, very kind of prog and hippie, folky, rocky, influenced.
I need to hear that. This is called Real Emotional Trash.
Daddy's on the run. And who will get there first? Shoot. Often done. Point me in the direction of your real emotional trash.
So, Anne, this goes on for another 7.5 minutes. Is it worth it?
Yeah, you know, it's worth it if you can kind of lay back and drink your smoothie and you know, or do the chemical equivalent of drinking some wheatgrass to get my drift and really sink into it. I mean, it's not a record that everybody's going to love. It's definitely a challenge to people who are looking for short, snappy songs. But the band is really together. It's very supple. And as long as you can tolerate Malkmus's sort of John Ashbery-influenced stream of consciousness lyrics, then you're going to love it.
We're speaking with Ann Powers. She's the LA Times pop critic. And before we let you go, we have to get you to weigh in on the music controversy of the week. It's all about the Black Crowes' new album, War Paint, or maybe it's not about their new album, because the record label didn't send copies to critics. And
right,
this decision has precipitated a fight between the band's management and Maxim magazine, because Maxim published a review of the album, and not necessarily a kind one, in its last issue, but apparently they never really heard the whole record.
Yeah, that wasn't the most shining moment for anyone involved, honestly. I mean, certainly Maxim's editors behaved unethically in this situation, and we've covered it a lot at our Soundboard blog on the LATimes.com site. What we discovered was that the writer, whose name I think is David Peisner, didn't know he was writing a review. He thought he was writing like a little capsule preview, and then it was made into a review. At least that's what he is maintaining at this point.
Because he'd like to work again, probably.
Yeah, no kidding. But, you know, hey, I hate to say it, but unethical things, actions on the part of arts journalists hasn't hurt that many over the years. We've seen a lot of them doing things like this out there, unfortunately. But what it really points out to me is the rock and the hard place that we're in as journalists and also that publicists are in, because with the Internet being so leaky and yet with artists wanting to stop illegal downloading and also stop kind of buzz that they can't control, publicists are being asked to hold back and hold back more, while journalists are being tasked with making judgments early on. We're all in this bind, you know, every single one of us. There isn't one of us who hasn't had to review a record on one listen, you know, or had to review a record sitting in a listening party with maybe even the artist right in front of you.
Hmm.
And that's not the context in which to make critical judgments, and yet we all have agreed on this ridiculous horse race in which we all have to review it first and we have to beat everybody else and we all have to stick by the sell-by date and all this. It's just silly. So I think what's eventually going to happen is that arts journalism is going to become a lot more fluid and music reviewing will become more fluid. We won't all be talking about the same record during the same week. And I think that's a good thing because it'll give whatever we're calling albums anymore, a longer lifespan, and it will free us up from this silly business of beating each other to the punch.
Ann Powers is the music critic for the LA Times, the pop music critic. Thank you so much for being so honest about that, Ann. And we're not going to ask you to review the Black Crowes release, but you know what? We'll just play the single on our way out so our listeners can decide for themselves. This is Goodbye, Daughters of the Revolution from the Black Crowes' forthcoming album, which we haven't heard.
I know, neither have I, but also I liked him in the past, so I'm giving him a vote of maybe.
All right. This is from War Pain. Thanks, Ann.
Thanks. Yeah.
So what do you think?
I like that last one a
you
lot.
Do? You like the you like the Black Crowes review?
Yeah, I like the Black Crowes.
Yes, but for the record, though, Maxim's editorial director told the AP that the magazine had erred in presenting this unreleased album by the Black Crowes as reviews and judging them with stars. They made a mistake.
Oops.
You know, you just got to take a deep breath, people. Sit back, relax. The world isn't going to end if you don't review it first.
See, there you go.
Wise words. Like, I know what I'm talking about. I don't
the
know.
Zen of Martin. And with that, we end the Bryant Park Project on an ohm note.
As we should every day.
The Bryant Park Project is directed by Jacob Gans, edited by Trish McKinney, produced by Matt Martinez. Our executive producer is Sharon Hoffman.
She's Allison Stewart.
She's Rachel Martin. She's
we're the
Mello.
Bryant Park Project, and we're from NPR News, and now we're going to listen to some music.